What's good, Atlanta? This is the Blog of Dirty podcast, where Dirty Bird is the word. If you haven't heard, I'm your host, John Bueller, lead writer for FanSided. Got an exciting show for you guys here today. Obviously, what happened last week versus the Carolina Panthers was nothing short of an unmitigated disaster. But we've also are only 2 weeks removed from the best defensive performance this team has put forth since 2009. So we've seen the highest of highs for the Falcons and the lowest of lows in very short succession. Got an exciting game here this week with Dan Quinn, Marcus Mariota, and the rest of the Washington Commanders coming back to Atlanta. And then the Falcons will be on their annual bye week ahead of the game versus the Bills and the big body Bens. But before we begin, be sure to hit that like button and smash that subscribe button. Lord knows that we all got to stick together and make sure this show is going to be fantastic. Good to see you here in the chat there, Christy. Going to recap a little bit of what went on with the Panthers before I dive into the Commanders in today's show. So let's get started here with some vibe check. How should we feel after the disaster of week three? Not good. Not good at all. For me, the talent's there all over the field. I think this team is poorly coached. Actually, I know this team is poorly coached. And I'll touch on the termination of wide receivers coach Ike Hilliard here in a little bit, but that's going to be the reason this team doesn't make the playoffs. This team just does not come up. It comes up short pretty much in every game against a equal level head coach or better. And look, you and I and everybody else knew that Carolina was going to be desperate in this game. This is a team that was 0-2. If you start 0-3, you're pretty much not making the playoffs, which makes me feel really good about my take on the Houston Texans not making it this year. They're 0-3, really struggling under C.J. Stroud. Could have told you that was coming. Didn't predict the Colts would be this good, but that's the beautiful part of the NFL. Every year is different. I'll try to unpack this fairly. I'll try not to rant and be overly mad about it, but this was pitiful. This was the worst game of the season. This was right up there with the Chargers loss last year, and I would say the Broncos lost 2 years ago. Maybe even the Broncos lost last year. I don't know. Whatever. Those two were just absolutely horrendous. And look, everybody handles failure the same way. People don't like being embarrassed. People, when they get embarrassed in life, they pick themselves up by their bootstraps. They put in the extra work. They do what they need to do to make sure that it's not going to happen again, which is why the whole, NFL is dogging the Falcons right now, and deservedly so, which is why I think that they'll put forth a pretty good effort here on Sunday versus the Commanders. But the problem is not everybody handles success the same way. And I think that's what really scares me about this coaching staff. They were out there just celebrating, doing cartwheels in the streets after beating the Vikings. I've told y'all for years that I think J.J. McCarthy is ass. I don't think he's any bit good. And it doesn't matter if Kevin O'Connell is a great head coach or if Brian Flores is an overqualified defensive coordinator. Their quarterback stinks there in Minnesota, and they got to deal with the consequences of that. I don't care what their record says. That team's not winning diddly-poo. But the Falcons just did not put in the work. You and I knew that this was going to be challenging going into Charlotte to beat a Panthers team. Bryce Young cooked us at the end of last year, and he didn't have to beat us this year because the Falcons beat themselves. So, and again, like, my biggest concern, I think, here with my biggest concern here with the Falcons is I don't think Raheem Morris is built for it. It's pretty obvious that this is not going to work with him. He's just too nice. And I think more importantly, he's not a hands-on guy. And I forget who exactly said this from 680 The Fan. It could have been Domino. It could have been Shapiro. It could have been anybody else. You saw Dave Canella's on the sidelines there for the Panthers, calling plays. Raheem Morris was just chewing gum. Like, that's not good enough. This is not good enough. This team is drafted well for the most part. Young players are hitting, which I think leads me to believe that if Morris isn't going to make it this year, you can get somebody better than him to be your head coach. The problem is I don't know who the best candidate out there to lead this team? Is it Joe Brady of the Bills? Is it I don't know. Is it Brian Flores? I mean, probably, because we'll hire anybody. I honestly have no idea who we would use to replace Raheem Morris at this point. But, you know, Christy, you bring up a great point here. Our division rivals play the hardest against us. I don't know why we did not take this game and the game against the Bucs seriously. Raheem Morris, that's why. And I'm so tired of the hand-holding with Zach Robinson. Like, I saw that his former head coach in Stillwater, Mike Gundy, got fired on a Tuesday. And I wrote about that, all of the fan side of college division. You can take him. You can take him back to Stillwater and ride a pack of dogs. His offense is so predictable. When we're in the pistol, we're running, but when we're in shotgun, we're passing. And it doesn't matter if we have a good offensive line, a promising young quarterback, and great skill position players. Even the dumbest defensive coordinators out there, ones with half a brain cell, know what we're trying to do here. But I will say this. I think that there was a lot of self-inflicted stuff here. I think the wind was a little bit of a factor. Parker Remo didn't kick very well at all. I think the fact that the Falcons didn't even get inside the Panthers 30 all afternoon was a huge problem. And even though the defense gave up 30 points, that's not on them. I thought the defense still played very hard for Jeff Ulbrich. And I think really the biggest thing in terms of this is, look, if Ross got to go, we have a built-in interim. And at that point, you know, I will say, though, if the Falcons struggle again, they're going to get rid of Robinson and they're going to get rid of Morris. And at that point, you're probably just going to have Ulbrich be the OC, be the head coach. You'll promote somebody from within to kind of be the defensive coordinator. And give TJ Yates an opportunity to be the OC at this point. Because, I mean, what's Robinson doing that TJ Yates can't do? Another great point, Christy, the Aints and Panthers, the Saints, I read Aints. The Saints and Panthers can lose every game, but they play to win against the Falcons. Look, we're a hated team in the division. And I thought Raheem Morris, having been here before, understanding the dichotomy of what it's like to play and coach in the NFC South, I don't know, twice, having been in Tampa, like, you should have figured this out. Like, we can't be dumb. We got to be a more locked-in team here. But I will say, though, I don't think the Falcons are going to play as poorly as they did versus the Panthers this past week, which is also, like, I can't expect them to play as good defensively as they did against the Vikings in 2 weeks here. And last point Chris has got before we move on to the next topic. The opponents better be prepared to win against us when we are using the same offensive plays designed for Kirk. The Panthers did that last year in last year's game. Again, this team is just not well coached. A head coach and offensive coordinator, and we as Falcons and here at Blog and Dirty Bird Nation are paying a price for it. So I'm going to bring up this other point here. I'm going to move on to this next question. Let's blow the whistle, blow the whistle. Haven't done this in a while. Is it ever going to change under Arthur Blank? I'm sorry, it's not. It's not. I've talked about this a little bit, you know, maybe on the show, but certainly with my friends, within my fan side and Minute Media colleagues. There's a dirty little secret about Arthur Blank. He's a likable guy. He's a guy that wants to succeed. You know, he's succeeded in pretty much every other venture in his life, you know, starting Home Depot with Bernie Marcus back in the 70s as an offshoot of, you know, Ace Hardware. He's done wonderful things for the city and the community, obviously, you know, rebuilding a children's health care of Atlanta up there by up there in Decatur and everything like that. First class stadium, has won a MLS Cup with Atlanta United. Going to a game at the Benz is fantastic. But there's two real blind spots that I think we have with this team. And I'm not going to say that we've crossed the Al Davis Rubicon like we have with Jerry Jones, where we're just not coming back with a crazy old man, for lack of a better word. The two things are, I think people that work for Arthur Blank, they're a little tight. Like, they're kind of on pins and needles, thinking that they're going to get fired in any given instant. And that's not necessarily the case. That's just kind of the impression that I get. People up there in Flowery Branch are kind of on pins and needles a little bit. And I think partially because I think the media tries to hold the Falcons accountable, but it doesn't always stick. And I think being able to, like, just being tight coaching tight, working tight. Like, you're not loose. You're not going into the games that matter, the most important day of the work week. Like, you're not going in with confidence. You're kind of going in loose. And on the other side of the coin, he does a terrible job of hiring head coaches. Like, the best head coach we had was Dan Reeves, and he fired him because Michael Vick didn't work out. Dan Reeves was a borderline Hall of Fame head coach. This is a guy that did phenomenal things with the Broncos. What did the first Super Bowl under this guy? And Mike Smith was really good because I think he was a very likable guy. Run defense, but the game changed on him. And obviously they didn't draft very well. The latter part with him under Thomas Dimitroff, if you will. But there's – I feel like Arthur Blank hires the same two type of head coaches. He hires yes men or overconfident idiots. And we kind of got both there with Raheem Morris now. And again, I want to see him coach. I want to see him get better. But like, the vibes that he's giving off are not like – this is not a pillar of confidence that I want to stand on. You know, we go down the line. Okay, Jim Mora Jr., an overconfident idiot. Bobby Petrino, an overconfident idiot. Mike Smith, a little bit of a yes man, but that's if I had to pick one or the other, that's kind of what I would go. Dan Quinn, a little bit of a – probably more of a yes man. I wouldn't say he's an overconfident idiot because he's probably going to beat us on Sunday. Arthur Smith, undoubtedly an overconfident idiot. And then you kind of got both with Raheem Morris here. This is a franchise that's coming up on 60 years old. It should be that damn hard to hire a good head coach. Everybody seems to do it. And look, we weren't going to hire Jim Harbaugh. Thank God we didn't hire Jim Harbaugh because that guy's a psychopath. But, you know, we couldn't hire Mike Vrabel because of the Arthur Smith of it all. That stinks. I don't necessarily know who you bring in here who changes the paradigm. And I think the worst part in all this is I don't think Terry Fontenot is doing a bad job. I don't think Jeff Ulbrich's doing a bad job either here. I just think that Raheem Morris is just not effective. And I think, you know, he's on the sidelines chewing gum. He's dapping up Dave Canales after we get our ass kicked. Like, you're getting paid millions of dollars. This is your second opportunity. You were begging. You were dying for this opportunity to be a head coach again. And this is what you're doing? Maybe you didn't deserve that opportunity. And I will say, though, Sunday is the biggest game of Raheem Morris's coaching career, the same for Zach Robinson, and this is the Blogging Dirty podcast. The only way it's going to change is if he makes, is if there's some pillar beneath Arthur Blank, whether that's quarterback, whether that's head coach, whether that's general manager, that becomes outstanding. And I don't think it's going to really be Raheem Morris. It could be Fontenot. It might have to be Penix. Because let's be real. The best era of Falcons football has occurred under Arthur Blank's ownership. That's because Matt Ryan was incredible. And I will go to my grave. I will make sure this man gets in the Hall of Fame. He absolutely deserves it. Do you know we got to deal with as a franchise? I think anybody that has success as a player or a coach or anything like that for franchises like the Falcons, the Dolphins, the Browns, the Commanders, the Jaguars – they got to overcome so much that other people don't have to do. But I don't know. Yes. Just definitely everybody out here, please just subscribe. I'm vibing right now. I'm kind of going through the emotions here as a fan. Again, I'm mostly covering college football now with my role with Fanside and Minute Media, but I'm still coming to you guys at least once a week to make sure the show is going to be a little bit more good. And I've got access to the YouTube channel from producer Sean. So I'm going to be able to chat with you guys through both not just my YouTube account, but also the one here on Blogging Dirty. Really going to grow this thing out here too. But yeah, I wanted to change under Arthur Blank, but like when's it stop being a coincidence? All right, let's move on to our third topic here. With some big Penix energy, let's just call it as we see it. That was the worst game of Penix's career up to this point. And that's okay. People have stinkers. And I think the thing that really – I'll say what bothers me about it, and then I'll say what I think isn't his fault, and then I'll also say what I think is good here. I think what bothers me the most about this game is he's not accurate enough. He throws it too hard, not enough touch and anticipation. There were a lot of plays on crucial third down situations where, you know, you get two good plays on offense, and then you sputter a little bit. And then, you know, you got to convert on a play that you can't do. ball's kind of sailing on him a little bit here. I think the two interceptions were really bad, one of which may not have been entirely his fault. The pick six, atrocious, just awful. And I think it kind of goes like, you know, the nature of what Shane Falco, played by Keanu Reeves, said there in The Replacements. Quicksand's a bitch. Quicksand's awful. You know, one thing bad happens, then it kind of compounds and compounds. People say that, you know, football momentum may not be hard to quantify, but it's a real thing. You can feel it in sports. You can feel the game and the nature of it all shifting and changing very quickly. This is the downside of having a guy with an absolute gun for an arm. You know, Cousins was more accurate. Matt Ryan was more accurate, which leads to the ball getting picked off a little bit more. But when you've got a guy who can really spin it, like Penix or Michael Vick, it's not always the most catchable ball. You're kind of sitting there, you know, the game slows down. You know, you're not chewing up clock. You're putting your defense in compromising situations because you're not completing passes that other guys can do. And again, he's only a second-year pro. This is only, like, that was only, what, his sixth career start? Like, he's got time to figure this out. But without question, this was his biggest stinker by far. And I think he played very well versus the Buccaneers. Didn't have to do much versus the Vikings, and I think he was asked to do a little too much versus the Panthers. But again, he was drafted number 8 overall to be a difference maker here. And I think he'll own this. And I think that that's good. That's kind of the other thing that I think is important here. Probably more in terms of Lions, you know, what's positive is I think mentally it's just tough. I don't think this is going to break him. I don't think this is going to phase him. He's like, yeah, I went out here and just crapped the bed. He started a bunch of games in college at both Indiana and Washington. I think it'll be okay. But I will also say, though, I don't necessarily think that the coaching staff did him any favors here. And again, Christy, you bring up a good point. The coaches just don't design plays for him. It's kind of just, you know, they're running the same exact offense for Kirk Cousins, and they have different skill sets. Like, there were a lot of plays out there where, like, you're asking London or Pitts to run a route or Mooney, and they're not getting to, like, the third down marker and boxing them out. Look, Drake London played power forward in high school football and briefly at USC. You know, he's supposed to be the next Mike Evans. Go be physical. Push Carolina's secondary out of the way and get that first down. But I don't know. There's things within the play calling that Zach Robinson's just not growing up. And honestly, I think the entire decision to not play starters in the preseason is coming back to bite this team in the ass really badly. Like, how arrogant are you? You know, think, oh, we're going to protect our players. Look, I understand, like, this is the Sean McVay finesse coaching tree sort of thing. Look, I don't necessarily know if this translates as seamlessly in the NFL, but in college football it does. You are never going to win a championship in the college football playoff when you have a finesse offense. It's why Lincoln Riley will never win one. It's why Josh Heupel's not going to win one at Tennessee. You have to inflict pain on your opposition on offense with both the ground game and the passing game in your offensive lineman. You need to burrow through another man's soul. You need to basically make the defensive line, you need to break their will in the fourth quarter. That's why Nick Saban won so much at Alabama. That's why Kirby Smart's won so much at Georgia. That's why Ohio State's been so good under, you know, Ryan Day and Urban Meyer before that. These teams have been the gold standard of doing that to the opposition. In the NFL, maybe you can get away with a little more finesse because you're dealing with great athletes, you know, the best athletes, the best minds, and every game basically comes down to one possession. That's the beautiful part of the NFL in terms of overall parity here. But, like, when you go into a game with a finesse sort of mentality, you're not doing everything that it takes to win. And I think that, you know, over the course of a game, you know, there may be a player or two there. It's like, oh, we got cute with it. Oh, this was dumb. Oh, we didn't make that tackle. But little becomes big over time. And again, it all kind of comes back to coaching here. The good news is I think Penix, he'll attract the right head coaches. He'll attract the right people that want to come here. But do you want to work for Arthur Blank? Do you like the ingredients that Terry Fontenot got? I think I would. But how much of a partnership? Is this guy really going to get a third head coach to work with? It's all really tough here, but look, I expect Penix to play better. you know, this upcoming week. I think the Falcons will play better versus the Commanders. I don't know if they'll win, but what we saw in Charlotte on Sunday is not going to happen again. If it does, we're going to have – it's not going to be just Ike Hilliard getting fired. I don't think Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson are going to be long for the Falcons if that's the case.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
So we're going to move on to our fourth topic here with from the highest perch in Flowery Branch. This is our last topic about the Panthers game. Firing Ike Hilliard seems is a little rich for me. Excuse me. Totally scapegoated. And I wrote this for Hail Florida Hail, our Florida Gators blog. He's a former star player at Florida, played for the Giants and everything like that. Falcons felt that they needed to point the finger at somebody, and they went after Hilliard. I don't think that was fair. Not to say that he necessarily was the reason that this team didn't play well. I thought the receivers did let Penix down, but the play calling was atrocious. The play calling has been awful all season long. And it kind of makes you wonder if Kirk Cousins was covering up a lot of Zach Robinson's issues. Like, it's the same, Cousins played in the same system for Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota for years. So there's probably some overlap there. And, like, you know, probably a more advanced operating level than, you know, with a second year pro having played for Penix Hoop, having played for like DeBoer and Tom Allen and stuff like that during his college career. I don't think that firing Hilliard is. Optically, it's not good. Like, we're already firing coaches this part of the season. Like, that's great. But I think, like the Falcons needed another instance of bad karma. Like, we need some more bad karmic implications with this team. Like, that's not good. Like, this is not – like, couldn't you just waited? Couldn't you – like, this guy probably knows everything with the inner workings of your team – more so than any outsider. Now you got to like distribute the work furthermore around your staff. I don't necessarily know if this makes it better. And again, I don't know what's going behind closed doors. Maybe it got untenable. Maybe it was just a really bad fit. Maybe it was a bad hire. I don't know. That's the nature of business. You know, we're not all privy to being in the same war room making these decisions. But I will say this. It doesn't matter what line of work you're in. And again, this is such an indictment on our society. When you're a manager, you have to be an advocate for the people that are working under you. It is not a position of praise or a position of power. It is a position of servitude and leadership. And if you can't do that, you don't need to be in that job. I know we live in a society where like the mid-tier jobs are kind of going away. It's all entry level or higher up, and we're kind of doomed there. In some ways, shout out to the rapture not happening yesterday. That's great. But anyway, like, it just shows that Raheem Morris is just ineffective in this role. Maybe there's other guys on the staff that could be good, but at the same time, I don't really know. I don't necessarily know if this makes us better. But I will say this. You are right, Christy. This is the staff is putting extra pressure on TJ Yates. Look, TJ Yates grew up at East Cobb too. He went to my rival high school. He's two or three years older than me. I want to see it work for him. Former North Carolina star, great player there for the Texans there, won their first playoff games there during the Matt Schaub era. And I think this is an opportunity for him to like kind of grow and really prosper as a head coach. Cause he didn't retire all that long ago. he might be built for it. He might be the he might be the chosen one for this franchise. that'd be unbelievable. But it'd be fitting to have the hometown hero saving this team. But it's not always that case in the NFL. In college, there's guys that have so much success at their alma mater. Kirby Smart, Mike Gundy up until recently, David Shaw at Stanford for a while there, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. It happens across the board. There's countless other examples of this. But I think that this is just another example of like, what are we doing? Like, what's Raheem Morris doing? Just self-prefacing and posturing and just a bunch of schmoozing and pandering. Oh, I'm going to throw this guy under the bus to save my hide. I'm so done with this. Like, can we just come together and figure it out? Can we not have a tire fire? I swear with this team, it's like you go to the plant and it says like, how many days since our last accident? And we can't even get to a week. Like 3 days and people are just lopping their arms off like tree limbs, like bush limbs. Like you're out there landscaping and we just can't figure it out. But I do expect the Falcons to kind of come back with a greater sense of urgency, because if they don't, this is going to be a long season for you and I and everybody else who follow this team. So we can only hope that they figure it out here. Let's move on to our penultimate topic with about the ball. I'm going to put it straight up here. The Atlanta Falcons cannot lose to Dan Quinn and Marcus Mariota. Like, contract the football team if you do this. People in this fine city, this fine fan base, hate these two people. I think the Dan Quinn disdain has gone away. I will never say a positive thing about Marcus Mariota for the rest of my life. That man quit on this team. Man doesn't put pineapple on a pizza, doesn't know where Barcelona is. Not a team player, just kind of a doofus out there playing quarterback. This is a guy that threw a ball on his back trying to beat the Panthers in Charlotte in the rain on Thursday night. And a game that I think Al Michaels questioned, why the hell did I leave NBC for this trash? Go call games with Kirk Herbstreit. You cannot lose to the Commanders with these two guys. Now, if Jaden Daniels is able to go for the Commanders, and again, he didn't play last week. He got hurt versus the Raiders. He got hurt versus the Eagles, and Mariota started versus the Raiders. Again, a revenge game for Marcus Mariota, if you will. Look, I've thought very highly of Washington coming in. This was my pick to win the NFC East. I had them going 13-4. I think I had them losing to the Eagles in the NFC Championship or to the Lions or something like that. Maybe the divisional round. I can't honestly remember, but I do think very highly of the Commanders this year. Cliff Kingsbury, maybe that's the guy we hire. We won't play a lick of defense, but we'll have a good offense if he's our head coach. I think the Commanders are dealing with a lot of injuries right now. And again, I'm not following the league as closely as I was in my previous role here with FanSided. But it kind of seems with the Commanders, like, it's still pretty good. But again, like, last year might have been more lightning in the bottle than we probably anticipated. And here's the other thing. Again, I talked about it, the karmic implications of this all. Look, the Falcons gave Dan Quinn every opportunity to keep his job, and he blew it. They still fired him midseason with Thomas Dimitroff and everything like that. But look, I always knew when Dan Quinn got his second opportunity to be an NFL head coach, he was not gonna take it for granted. He was not gonna take it lightly. He was gonna flourish. He was gonna learn from the mistakes he made in Atlanta. He was a phenomenal defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. They've devolved into the saddest bag of crap since he left. They don't have Micah Parsons anymore. Cowboys are cooked. So, misery loves company. So Falcons fans and Cowboys fans, just we're having a time right now. But you're looking at yes. Yeah, thanks for chiming in on the chat there, Michael. No scary Terry either. You got to win this game. You got to win this game because, look, this is not about going into the bye at 2-2. This is about stopping the bleeding because, look, right now through the first quarter of the season, I think the Bills are the team to beat. I think they're the team to win the Super Bowl this year. And, again, I'm saying this right now. And I don't think Sean McDermott's a great head coach. And I think that's going to cost them in the end. But also, my pick to win the Super Bowl in Baltimore, they're 1-2. They're just like us. They're dealing with misery as well. I don't think the Ravens are going to win a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. I just don't necessarily know if he's got it in him. If they get a new head coach, it's not John Harbaugh. Maybe they can do it. I still remain adamant to my belief. This is the year that either the Bills or the Ravens need to win a Super Bowl. And if either don't or both don't, they're not going to with their current regimes. That means you got to get a new head coach if you don't win a Super Bowl for those two teams. I'm sorry. Come on down to Atlanta and try again. But Dan Quinn has learned from his mistakes and failures here. And again, he basically failed from 2016 to 2020 in various ways. It's been a long time since he coached here. You got to come out here ready to play. It's a must win in terms of like the ledger stuff, but like you can't be sorry like you were versus Carolina. You got to play like you did against the Bucs or better to win this game. And I'll say that there were moments there in the first two games the Falcons like looked like a playoff team. Last week, they looked like the Wisconsin Badgers. Like, I don't know if they're going to win another game with what I saw out of them last week. But the NFL, like, people lose. Your best teams in the league still lose about 3 to 5 games a season. Your worst teams still win about 3 or 5. It's what you do with that middle 12. Do you want to be 7-10 BS again? Do you want to win 9 games? It starts by taking care of a business versus a Commanders team. That's more gettable than I thought. I also think that there's a chance the Commanders might come in here and take us lightly, which I think is in our favor. And if that's the case, you have to take advantage. You got to be ready. And that's the other thing. And again, I cover this stuff for a living. I cover football for a living. I don't understand how these players and coaches don't recognize what you and I do. It's like, this is a must win. You got to have this game. Like the optics of it all, because when you lose games like this, you're looking at a situation where like, it's doubly bad. You know, like you're 1-3 if you lose this game. You're heading into your next two games after the Commanders are the against what the Bills and the 49ers. And again, I mean, I picked us to beat the Bills to start the season. I thought that was a schedule loss for the Bills. That may not work out for us. And I'll never say anything positive about Kyle Shanahan again. But the 49ers are still kind of around there. They're 3-0. I believe they beat the Cardinals, if I'm not mistaken. Again, I didn't think very highly of that team. But again, I think the NFC West is going to be decided by two games. Like the winner between the 49ers, the Rams, and the Cardinals is going to have two more wins than the Seahawks, if you will. This is a big opportunity here in this game. And I think where it's ultimately going to be decided is how Cliff Kingsbury is contained by Jeff Ulbrich. I think Jeff Ulbrich's going to basically have to take it upon himself. Like, I'm going to win this game, damn it. Because I don't want to relocate my family again. I don't want to do this. So I think we have an above-average defensive coordinator. But we're going against above average offensive coordinator in Cliff Kingsbury and above average head coach in Dan Quinn. And we got a below average head coach in Raheem Morris. Just can't do this. We can't lose dumb games. We got to just stop being, we got to just, I don't know, take some Adam Gase smelling salts and wake the F up. Like, oh my God, can we coach this team? I mean, Christy, Michael, you and I, like, let's just go coach this team. Like, at some point, because whatever, I don't even know much about football X's and O's. I'm just going to be out there in the sidelines like, y'all figure it out. Whatever you ran at Washington, Michael Penix, let's do that. You know, just I'm getting so frustrated with this coaching staff. But please, Jeff Ulbrich, bring the pass rush. Let's make it happen. Let's make Marcus Mariota think he's back in Hawaii with how much we knock him over. All right, and then we're going to go on to our final topic of the day with some I saw the line. Let's make a pick against the spread versus the Commanders. Yeah. All right, so looking at it here from ESPN Bet. And again, this is Wednesday late morning. Game's on Sunday. It's a 1 p.m. kick here in Atlanta. It's going to be on CBS. Right now, the Falcons are getting 1.5 points at home. And the money or the over under is 44.5 points. The money line has the Commanders at -130, the Falcons at +110. The matchup predictor there for ESPN Analytics has the Commanders projected to win 58.6% of the time and the Falcons projected to win 41%. So like I said, this is a very winnable game. We're not favored. I understand why that is. But the odds are not in your this is not an impossibility. Like, you need to go out and do this. This is like Wisconsin needed to beat Maryland. Like, you need to just recognize the situation at hand and make it happen. Yes, and Michael, your great point. Austin Eckler's out too. Yeah, he's cooked. Feel bad for him. He got hurt like really early in the season. And yeah, Michael, you want to call it defensive plays? That's good. I'm gonna be in charge of the running game. I love that. An offensive line, maybe special teams. I don't know. Vibes curator. I'm gonna be the vibes curator on the sidelines. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, they're not gonna let anybody with long hair be a head coach in this league because they won't let Rob Ryan do it. But I'll just be a younger, smarter, less chubby and more handsome version of Rob Ryan. We'll be out there, you know, the dude on the sidelines. Yeah, that's what we're gonna do. All right, but here's how we're gonna do this. I'm gonna do some math real quick here in my head. I am gonna take, against my better judgment, because you know what, I need this, particularly after if Georgia doesn't beat Alabama. This could be a really crappy money weekend for me. I'm going to go with the Falcons winning 27-23. So that means that they win and cover the spread. And I believe the over hits at 48 over 44.5. My logic here is I think that the Falcons have a very good pass rush in this game. I think that they are able to disrupt the quarterback, either, you know, ruin Mariota's day, force him to turn the ball over, or have Daniels not be as precise. And again, this is a team that the Falcons played very close last year in the penultimate game of the season, granted, over there in Landover, Maryland. I just think that the urgency is more on the Falcons side. It's at home, but that doesn't matter. I mean, like, the good news is, like, the Commanders have lost a lot of fans over the years after poor ownership. I don't necessarily think that we're going to be swarming here in the bins with a ton of Commanders fans. Like, this isn't like Chiefs Kingdom taking over, or Steelers Nation, or Eagles fans, or anything like that. Like, the home crowd, like, it won't be anti us, so we'll have a chance here. But I think the single biggest thing here that we have to do is just lock in, like, just not be stupid. Like, don't be overconfident idiots. Realize the plays in the game where you can win and win those damn plays. Like, there's about 4 to 6 of them and everything like that. Yes. Okay. Michael, you got 38-17 Atlanta. I'm not as bullish on that as you, but I respect the hell out of that pick. Christy, I believe that. I think I can see this game keeping the fans' blood pressure in the strike zone for the fourth quarter. I pray we make our field goals. I forget exactly when I first heard this. Kevin Clark of ESPN, back when he was with The Ringer, he used to say, the Seattle Seahawks do not play any normal games, and neither do the Atlanta Falcons. My fiance, Rosemary, wants to do this thing on TikTok. She's kind of a new football fan because, you know, this is my profession. So she's more into film and stuff like that. She has this theory called the third quarter perspective. Like, the game, you watch any football game, and how the vibes are coming out in the third quarter kind of determines if you're going to win. You check back at different points in the game. Like, okay, 5 minutes out, the team's down 17. They're not winning, you know, and everything like that. And I said, there is one caveat to this. If it's a Seahawks or Falcons game, you can throw that out of the window because they don't play normal games. They don't play normal games at all. Oh God, this, I appreciate y'all hanging out in the chat here. This team is breaking our brains into a million pieces, but you know, as we go into the downward descent into madness with this team, I'm glad to have you along for the ride, because this was episode 60 of the Blogging Dirty Podcast. You can follow me, John Bueller, on Twitter or the X at Bueller118. You can follow the show on YouTube at Blog and Dirty FS. Again, hit that like button, smash that subscribe button. We're going to build this thing out here. I've got the login back on YouTube. Going to make more exciting, engaging content out there. I'll even ask y'all a question from the account and future episodes, you know, once this goes live on YouTube and everything like that. You know, be sure to follow along on Twitter at Blog and Dirty. You can, you know, be sure to read on Blog and Dirty, read all of our fan-sided content on the Falcons on fanside.com, our regional betting network site, ATL All Day. You know, be sure to read on NFL Spin Zone. Again, I'm more in the college division covering college sports now, but, you know, just read all my stuff there. I try to overlap some stuff. I even wrote something about the Falcons for Hail Florida Hail about Ike Hilliard, and wrote something the other day about the Falcons, you know, on John of the Dog with Jalen Walker and Leonard Floyd having a big day. Again, you know, just kind of think about it in terms of like, you know, where the alma maters of these players are playing. So like, you know, you might see stuff from Beyond Penix on Husky Hall and things like that. Bijan Robinson on Hook'em headlines, Drake London on Ryan Troy, you know, kind of look around there, see what happens within the course of each week here. But yeah, We're having just an absolute blast right now doing this show. And you know what? I was not looking forward to this because I was like going to rant the whole time about how bad the Falcons look for the Panthers. But Michael and Christy, you really cheered me up today. And I really, really appreciate all of that here and everything like that. Yeah, keep the good vibes going there in the chat. We'll keep bringing the show to you guys here each and every Wednesday, you know, in and around 11 o'clock. Because that's just how we roll here at the ATL. Once again, thanks for listening, and this is the Blog and Dirty Podcast.